Donnelly announces he'll vote no on Kavanaugh. Vice President Pence to headline the fall GOP dinner. That plus Donnelly and Braun on Medicare and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 28th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Senator Joe Donnelly announced he'll vote against Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court the day after a hearing with Kavanaugh and his accuser, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford.
Dr. Ford says Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her when they were both in high school, and she testified this week before the Senate Judiciary Committee about the incident. Kavanaugh strenuously denies the allegation, and he said Democrats on the committee orchestrated a, quote, political hit on him in a bid for revenge by the Clintons. Donnelly says he has, quote, deep reservations about Kavanaugh's nomination, and he says Republicans' refusal to allow an FBI investigation into the allegations means Donnelly doesn't have all the information necessary. The Democratic Indiana senator says he'd be glad to work with President Trump on a different nominee. Republican challenger Mike Braun calls the allegations against Kavanaugh, quote, an embarrassment to our democracy, and says Donnelly's decision to oppose the nomination is a grave mistake.
We've been talking about it for a while, so what impact will this vote have on the Senate race? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette Statehouse reporter Nikki Kelly. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, we've been talking about this for a month. We finally have Donnelly's answer, at least we think we do. There were more developments in which there might now be a potentially week-long FBI investigation, which Donnelly did cite as a reason to vote no. But assuming that Donnelly votes no, is this, as Mike Braun puts it, a grave mistake?
It could be. If he would come out and said, I'm voting for Kavanaugh, the question would be, does Mike Braun have a chance, right? Because he's now, Donnelly has now secured these Donnelly Trump voters, and now he may have abandoned them. And we've seen that in polling. We talked a couple weeks ago about the poll that came out that showed that Donnelly's drop was far greater if he voted against the president, voted against Kavanaugh, than the upside benefit with his base Democrats that had he opposed him. So, yeah, I think that potential's there. Now, that poll we talked about 2 weeks ago was in a very pretty clean, I mean, it was a combative confirmation process, but this is completely different.
Yeah.
And so I think those people that were going to abandon Donnelly, if he voted against, are probably still going to abandon him. I mean, that's probably the group of people that think Kavanaugh is just getting he's been set up, this is an orchestrated process. But are there more people now who before said, I don't really care about the Supreme Court, I've got other issues? It's become so much, it's become about other things now, yeah. Right? And so you could have more people in the mix that offset that drop, that deepen the drop. If they're now, I mean, we saw all these Trump voters kind of come out of the woodwork around the state in 2016, and maybe they're more passive voters in a midterm election. Well, they could look at this and go, this guy's getting screwed, and I'm taking it out on Joe Donnelly. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe we'll see numbers between now and then. We have no idea what's going to happen the next week. I mean, Joe Donnelly kind of boxed himself in here because it was contingent on the FBI investigation, which he's now getting. So he's going to have to either say yes or no again.
Yeah, I wanted to say that. If the FBI does its investigation here, as Republican Jeff Flake and others are now saying will hopefully happen, is there any way he changes his mind?
Well, it depends on... You know, it depends on what's found out in this investigation that has to be compressed into a week. Do they get to the people that need to be interviewed or not? And what happens? There's no way. The issue of the polling before, after Dr. Ford testified, she was so compelling and so convincing. I don't think there's no doubt in my mind that this occurred and that he was the perpetrator. Okay, so then on top of that, you get his response. If Dr. Ford had come out that way, we would be talking about a hysterical woman. Instead, we have a completely unhinged candidate for the U.S. Supreme Court who is completely partisan, who subscribes to the same nonsense about left-wing conspiracies targeting him, doesn't want to address the issue here and whether or not he did what he is accused of doing. I mean, all of the defense out there was all about, oh, poor me, the victim. I mean, he's even using his children to tear up on television. If a woman had done that, the discussion would be over. I think he's temperamentally unsuited for the court based on that performance, even if he is somehow exonerated, but I don't expect that to happen because I believe her.
Yeah, a one-week FBI investigation probably doesn't come out with a lot of new information, though it might in some parts, but failing that, is there any way Donnelly can go back now and say, well, okay, yeah, I guess I'll vote yes?
Well, I mean, he could. I mean, if it literally is an investigation in which they say, we talked to Dr. Ford and we talked to Brett Kavanaugh and we couldn't say. I mean, if they literally only talked to the two people and it's the he said, she said again, then I think Donnelly is well within
which is,
saying,
by the way, what you have in most
rape
cases.
Right.
And we don't go by Sharia law, which is what what's-his-face from South Carolina was asking for. There weren't any other witnesses to it. Well, guess what?
I mean, at that point, I think Donnelly could still say, okay, yeah, they did do a minimal amount, but I don't think it was enough. And it gives him a justification that's beyond just political ideology or just qualifications.
I don't see him going back. I think this is it. And I think that's the right calculation politically, never mind what the right and wrong answer in the moral sense is. Because at this point, it seems to me, if he tried to placate, say, Trump supporters, I mean, let's put it this way, you can't win by trying to mitigate your losses, it seems to me. It's like watching a sports team. I know Ann loves sports metaphors. And when my team that I'm rooting for goes into sort of a defensive mode to protect a lead or they're only up by a goal.
It drives you crazy, doesn't it?
It drives me crazy because you know what always happens? They lose every single time. This is the time to throw away all of the calculations and just do what he needs to do. Because when you think about it, if he does say, well, maybe I'll mitigate some losses, maybe I'll pick up a few people, really, are people going to go from the Republican side who care about this issue and jump over Mike Braun to go to Joe Donnelly? No.
Yeah.
So to me, you double down on the women, perhaps, in suburban areas and educated women who say, and we're already starting to see a little bit of this just in the last 48 hours.
That's exactly what
they're outraged.
That's exactly what I want to ask. In a race this close, it might be moderates, more moderate people, or moderate Republicans even, who might decide this race. And if the conventional wisdom tells you those people live in the donut counties around Indianapolis, and a lot of them are white, educated women. In that case, in this specific instance, with this specific vote and this specific nominee, and after that hearing, is Joe Donnelly's no vote going to win some of those people over?
It could. I think it depends on the outcome of this. It depends on the outcome of this FBI investigation. They come back and they have all of these people that they've interviewed, the committee interviewed before and had sworn statements from, come back in and say and reconfirm under penalty of perjury that this didn't happen. Then it could mitigate that.
They never said this didn't happen.
I think
said they didn't remember.
That they didn't remember. We had a problem with that with women before this election and need to do more to reach out to women and need to do more to take these things seriously. I think the first reaction from Democrats and Republicans was with their political outcome in mind. And the rest of the country is kind of in a wait-and-see mode, I think.
Including a lot of these people. I don't think that Joe Donnelly has to win over women, to use your phrasing. I don't even think that matters.
I think
women at this point are the women we're talking about, the demographic we're talking about, suburban, college educated. All they've seen what they need to see with Chuck Grassley, with Senator McConnell. This is going to be an oppositional vote as opposed to probably voting in favor of.
But a yes vote might have generated opposition to Joe Donnelly.
Exactly. I mean, it gets back to the notion, but I think
put him in the same category as
right.
Those
but
people,
I, for that demographic,
disrespect for women victims that we saw McConnell demonstrate, we saw Grassley demonstrate.
That's what I was going to say. That's the best commercial.
The same way to try to hide behind a woman prosecutor because they didn't have the gumption to address the questions themselves. They were embarrassed about asking personal questions. I mean, it was disrespectful in the extreme, and I think women are going to understand that.
Well, the Indiana Republican Party this week announced Vice President Mike Pence will come to Indiana to headline the party's fundraising dinner just a few short weeks before the November election.
Pence's visit to Indianapolis will come October 12th as he provides the keynote speech at the state GOP's major fall fundraising event. In an email to supporters, GOP Chair Kyle Huffer talks about how critical this year's election is for Indiana, saying the Hoosier State is once again the center of the political world. Pence will also reportedly soon feature in an attack ad against Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly. The National Republican Senate Committee is set to put Pence in ads against three vulnerable Democratic incumbents. Its first ad against Montana Senator John Tester started running earlier this month.
And Delaney, Mike Pence's favorability numbers are generally good in every poll we've seen, much better than he was when he was governor in the last couple of years.
He's good as long as he's gone.
Yeah, moving up to vice president clearly improved his favorability in Indiana. So, could he sway a Senate race that is expected to be this close?
The voters are going to make up their mind. I mean, they've been inundated by ads back and forth on this. And in particular, Joe Donnelly has been campaigning aggressively for 6 years. We have seen less enthusiasm from Mike Braun. They're going to make up their mind based on pre-existing conditions and issues like that. And they know where Mike Pence is on those issues. And they know where he is on every other issue. I don't see him swaying. I don't see an endorsement making a difference in a high-profile race like that. It can for county commissioner or something along those lines, not for this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's there to raise money and to gin up the base a little bit. Is that really all he's going to be able to do here?
Well, yeah, but I think that's important. I think it's important to be able to raise money for the party. We got a record amount for our party and cash on hand right now down the stretch. We have a record number of voter contact here with our team on the ground, and so I think he's here as much to, you know, there's nobody walking in that room undecided in this election, but that is a room full of people. We need to work for the next 39 days or so and run through the tape and get Mike Braun elected.
And yet Mike Pence will obviously be on a lot of news footage after that dinner talking about how great Mike Braun is, not that that's new necessarily.
Right.
So going back to the last discussion, that population that might decide this election who lives around Marion County, they're going to be thrilled to see Mike Pence's face again?
As a rubber stamp for Donald Trump?
I don't think it necessarily matters. Again, there's no novelty here. Let's put it this way. I think the only way a Mike Pence endorsement in the U.S. Senate race would have an impact is if he endorses Joe Donnelly. Then people would take note, and I think...
And it's man
and I'm not now. I'm not suggesting that I've heard that's going to happen, but... But that's the
he
only
might
way.
Refuse
that's
to not-
the, I was just going to say, would that actually help Joe Donnelly?
But that's the only way I think that would have any kind of
newsworthy.
Meaningful, real significance in the campaign.
Will Mike Pence do a good enough job of ginning up the base, as they say?
Sure, he will, and he'll raise some money, and that's important in the remaining weeks to get that, you know, word out. I mean, the fact is I think it would be kind of an embarrassment for the vice president if his home state, you know, if they lost that Senate race. Yeah.
Well, time now
when they lose that Senate race.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post a non-scientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Vice President Mike Pence have an impact on Indiana's Senate race? A, yes, he will help Republican Mike Braun. B, yes, he will hurt Republican Mike Braun. Or C, no, he won't have an impact. Last week's question, should Senate Republicans encourage an FBI investigation into sexual assault allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh? Apparently, Jeff Flake voted in our poll. 80% said yes, 20% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly, you'd think I would have said that enough by now, and Republican challenger Mike Braun both seek to assure seniors they'll protect Medicare and Social Security, but neither gave many specifics in a recent AARP Indiana town hall.
Republicans criticized Senator Joe Donnelly for two votes in particular, to defend the Affordable Care Act and oppose the federal tax reform bill. But Donnelly uses those votes as his shield in the Medicare and Social Security debate. Donnelly says the ACA extended Medicare's life and solidified the program, and he says the tax cut bill will explode the deficit and threaten the health of both senior programs. Mike Braun says future generations will have to make tough decisions on Social Security and Medicare, but he'll only say those decisions shouldn't include raising the retirement age, cutting benefits, or raising taxes. Braun also points to his company's health care plan as a model for the nation. A recent CNN report says the deductibles for Braun's workers are far higher than the national average, $5,000 for individuals and $10,000 for families.
Nikki Kelly, quite frankly, are the answers from either candidate? I mean, these were very targeted events to a very targeted group of voters, and they were an hour-long town hall for each of them. So in those where they were repeatedly asked about this stuff and didn't really give many specifics, is that good enough for these voters?
I don't think it is. And welcome to my life, because we ask specific questions all the time and don't get any answers. I mean, frankly, on the Mike Brown stuff, I mean, what's left if you take away, you know, the retirement age or cutting benefits or raising taxes? I mean, I really have zero idea where either of them stand on those topics.
Is that, I mean, again, we talked about how influential this particular voting bloc can be on last week's show. So when you're getting those answers from both candidates, is that hurtful to both candidates?
Well, what else are they going to say? This is one of those where the answers, you could have written the story a month ago and taken the week off, because you knew what they were going to say. I mean,
you spoiled my idea, John.
Pettis. It's not the we actually taped this 2 months ago. I won't tell anybody.
Saul is coming.
Just sorry to
let it
out. It's
all working out the way we thought.
It may not be the third rail it used to be in politics. It may not be as deadly now as people. The budgetary situation has changed and people realize there has to be some sort of reconciliation of spending and expenditures and revenue at some point. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be any less threatening to candidates who dare to deviate from what would be seen as the safe line in this regard.
I was intrigued by, I mean, the two votes that Republicans have hammered Joe Donnelly the most for are Obamacare against the tax reform bill. And he's using those two specific votes as, this is why I'm the defender.
He's using elements of those.
Yes, he's using elements.
The two most popular things in a large unpopular program.
Yes, but
to defend it.
He is using that. So how does that play?
Well, I mean, in a room like this, you're not going to walk into the AARP town hall and do anything but screw up if you start talking about making changes to Medicare and Social Security.
Sure.
And we shouldn't. We shouldn't make changes to Medicare and Social Security for the people that are currently on it or soon to be on it.
And they both did say that.
Yeah.
They both did say that.
That promise has to be kept. And I don't think...
I don't think there's anybody, but
the second part of the question, do you touch the age or benefits or you know, the tax rate, the employer tax rate, or the employee tax rate that funds Social Security and these things? They do a report on the solvency of these programs every year. They're not rapidly insolvent, heading towards insolvency, but you can see it. You can see the Social Security in 2034, the trust fund's gone.
You and I,
oh, yeah.
And Nikki,
well,
can
and
see
that,
it.
And so Medicare Part A goes insolvent in 2026. Right. Medicare Part B and D is good because they created that program so it was self-sustaining.
Right.
So you could adjust the contributions that are made to it and adjust and to keep it on sound actuarial footing. But the next deal's got to be the guys like you and me, where they you're going to have to help pay for some of these programs to run these people through a rich benefit. But don't count on, you know, if, you know, a guy like, I haven't built Social Security into my retirement plan, you know,
and I should have to pay
into it.
Since neither of them really got specific, it was, the programs should remain exactly the same for those who are currently on it or about to go on it, and then after that, I guess we got to talk about it. Since both of them gave that answer, is it just negative?
You've got other
neutral
issues there, too. I mean, when you're talking about an insolvency or the potential insolvency of Social Security, part of it's the deficit, okay? And that tax giveaway to millionaires that the Republicans are touting that gives $700 million in tax savings to one individual, Sheldon Adelson, $700 million.
These are completely separate
$700
things.
$700 million. No, it isn't.
Because
it explodes
the
deficit.
Well,
they both have to do with
money.
But they don't have to.
Mike Braun brought it in. And the point of this is you've exploded the deficit.
That.
You're spending too much.
Spending too much money.
And on the pre-existing conditions and the coverage for 400,000 Hoosiers, I think seniors care about that as well. They all have family members with pre-existing conditions. And Mike Braun and Curtis Hill want to take that away. So those are issues. It's not only about what goes into their pocketbook.
Curtis, kitchen sink answer. We got Sheldon Anderson.
Adelson.
We got Curtis Hill and Mike Braun.
Well, you know.
Well, I haven't heard Curtis's name in a while.
It all fits together. It's all part of that right-wing conspiracy that you guys have.
It's a drinking game, I think. You're trying to get all these things checked off.
Is it called the Devil's Triangle?
Well, I think you might be too liberal.
Oh, boy. Republican Mike Braun picked up some significant endorsements and financial support this week after a recent AP report said some were worried about his campaign.
The Indiana Chamber of Commerce previously declined to endorse in this year's Senate race, but the U.S. Chamber of Commerce isn't gun-shy. It announced this week it will back Republican Mike Braun. That endorsement also comes with a financial backing. The chamber ran an ad attacking Joe Donnelly for voting against the federal tax reform bill.
When Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren tried to kill middle-class tax cuts, they needed more votes. So Joe Donnelly reported for duty.
The Donnelly campaign notes the U.S. Chamber vocally praised Donnelly for legislation he pushed to reform banking regulations, and the organization just last year awarded Donnelly its Spirit of Enterprise Award for the third time. Mike Braun this week also earned an endorsement from the National Rifle Association, and the Trump-aligned super PAC America First will reportedly pour $2 million into Indiana on behalf of Braun.
John Schwanos, these endorsements and ad buys come on the heels of that AP report that some sub-Republicans, especially at the national level, are worried about what they see as Braun's sort of lackluster campaign. Whether it is or not, that's the perception. And as we often say, perception is reality, at least in politics. So does this week of endorsements and financial support turn back that narrative?
I guess we'd have to ask ourselves the question, in whose eyes? Who's following this that closely? We do. And people, certainly funders in D.C. and do.
Right.
But if you talk about the rank and file voters in the state of Indiana, I think they'd probably laugh if they say, you know, last week, if we charted this, we're up 2 percentage points, down. They'd probably say, yeah, okay. The only way it has an impact is, again, if the faucet turned and there had been disaffection with the Braun campaign on the part of, you know, deep-pocketed funders outside the state of Indiana, and that money flow stopped, that would be significant. But in the absence, the negative would be significant.
About,
the fact that they're on board is not, I'll go back to sort of an answer I gave a few minutes ago, it's really not that significant or novel.
But it feels like, so this conversation is probably not about what do the voters think. It's about what do those, especially at the national level, who are controlling the spigots, think about Mike Braun's campaign and whether or not, for instance, why isn't he putting his own money into it in the general election race?
Well, there are clearly some insiders who haven't been very impressed and don't feel like he's taking advantage of some opportunities that are out there. Obviously, if they see money coming in and more endorsements, that at least kind of stops that for a little bit. But, you know, we'll have to see soon whether Mike Braun is going to put his own money in. He said he wouldn't, then he did. But
I remember that part. We talked about this.
So we'll see what he does now. But, I mean, it's kind of like an every week story. You just kind of have to churn it as you go.
Yeah. The endorsement's not a surprise. I mean, the U.S. Chamber wants tariffs. Okay, they want the trade war, and the state chamber didn't endorse him because it hurts Indiana. Okay, so he is advocating policies that hurt the state that he wants to represent in Washington. So the U.S. chamber is delighted with him. Nobody else is, but they are.
Is this the week Mike Braun needed after that previous week with that story?
That story was based on deep pockets in D.C. being upset that he wasn't putting personal money in, and then they had to come in and spend money here. It's not that he's not out campaigning. It's just it's a false narrative. And so we set this up, and then something like this happens, and we go, oh, maybe it's turning the narrative back. It was never an inert campaign where the guy was on vacation for the last 40 days.
Well, he's had a third of the appearances.
Moving on. The U.S. House approved funding legislation this week to delay a government shutdown until December.
The legislation includes a full year of funding for the Departments of Defense, Labor, and Health and Human Services, and a short-term extension of the Violence Against Women Act, but it has no new money for Trump's proposed wall with Mexico. The House approved the bill by an overwhelming majority, and President Trump announced his intention to sign the measure. Indiana Representatives Jim Banks and Trey Hollingsworth voted against the bill. Todd Rokita didn't vote at all, while the rest of the Hoosier delegation voted in favor. Self-proclaimed fiscal conservative organization Americans for Prosperity Indiana says it's disappointed in the measure. It says the bill continues a cycle of reckless spending.
And Delaney, is it notable that this bill's passage wasn't really notable this week and that it largely got lost in the shuffle?
There's way too much going on. And I don't know why you're talking about the wall. I thought Mexico was paying for that. Why do we need that in the budget at all?
That's why it's not in there.
Yeah, that's why it's not in there.
That's the answer.
Yeah, Mexico's paying. Yeah, I'm sure they're going to start construction. This is ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They control both houses, and they control the presidency, and they can't write a budget, okay? They can't do a normal budget to take us through the next period of time. They have to do these shortfalls all the time. They're totally incapable of governing.
I'm just excited that Andolini really wants all the Republicans to write the new state budget, or the new U.S. budget.
Yeah. Well, I so, mean, who else is going to write it?
A couple notable things. One, they're about 75%. They had to take these procedural steps and reauthorize these big spending packages, and DOD for the first
big
time in 20 years,
packages,
HHS
like
for
that.
The first time in 10, and they're about 75% of the way to having a normal kind of budget process, which we haven't had in a long time. And I know that's not like a bar that you should get a lot of credit for, but it's Congress, and we've not done it in like 25 years, and that's both parties' fault. This was a good move, a big move in that direction.
It's been a while.
But it kicks the can down the road, as we've been kicking the can
a
little bit. Do you think we're genuinely closer to maybe in December a budget deal, an actual budget deal?
Yeah, I think we're getting much closer to it. And I think these big reauthorizations that haven't happened are now happening.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.